Moncrief on News Talk.
Now then, today marks the 80th anniversary of the world's first nuclear attack. On the 6th of August 1945, the atomic bomb hit Hiroshima, and by the end of the year, approximately 140,000 people in the city had died. So how are the people of Japan, how have they been commemorating this horrific event? And how are nuclear weapons viewed in the country today? Dr. David McNeil is a professor of communications at the Sacred Heart University in Tokyo, and he joins me now. David, how are you today?
I'm grand. Thanks for asking. How are you?
I'm very well. A somber day, I presume, in Japan.
Yeah, it's all August 6th is always a somber day. You have a big memorial in Hiroshima itself. You know, a lot of people attend that. About 55,000 people attend. You have most of the world governments represented there. And you also have, throughout the day on TV, sort of programs rehearsing what happened, and old footage of the sort of victims and so on. And some of the victims then, of course, the surviving victims of the bombing are often called on TV to talk. So it is a somber day. It's a day for reflection, for looking back on what happened.
Right.
And for people remembering it.
Would they still show some of the full horrors of what it was like on TV?
Well, the interesting thing is there isn't that much footage of the actual event itself, right? There's the famous sort of mushroom cloud coming up. There's pictures sort of days, weeks later of some of the victims of the bombing or the radiation from the bombing. But the days in the sort of hours and days after the bombing itself, there's very little because cameras were not allowed to go there. But what you have is a sort of stock footage, if you like, of the event, you know, from U.S. archives and so on.
Sure. Is the debate around it changing a bit these days?
Well, I think it is. I mean, that's what I was trying to sort of deal with in the piece I wrote for the Irish Times today. I don't know if you know, but in the last general election in July, you had you had a party, first of all, a far-right party called San Seito, which won about 14 seats in the Diet, the national parliament. And several of their politicians openly advocated possessing nuclear weapons. And there was a survey done this week by the Mainichi newspaper, one of the major newspapers here. And they said that about 10 politicians in the Diet support Japan's own deterrent, nuclear deterrent. Now, that might not sound like a lot. You know, it's a small fraction of the people in the parliament. But it is significant, I think, that politicians in Japan are kind of openly expressing these views. And you also had an ex-prime minister, Shinzo Abe, who was assassinated, of course. But before he was killed, he also said that Japan should sort of not let its nuclear taboo stop it from embracing the kind of security realities of where it is. You know, it's in a neighborhood where most of the major powers, China, North Korea and Russia, are nuclear armed. And he advocated a kind of a NATO-style arrangement where Japan could share nuclear weapons with its allies. So I think that the narrative is changing as we get further and further away from Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Right. When somebody says something like that, I imagine it would convulse most of Japan. I imagine of all the nations, they'd be the most likely to react against such an idea.
Well, of course. I mean, that's, you know, and the reaction was as you'd expect. I mean, Hidankyo, which is the organization that represents the Hibakusha, the survivors of the nuclear bombing, they reacted with horror. In fact, I interviewed the chairman of Hidankyo. They won the Nobel Peace Prize last year. And he said, it's not just absurd for a Japanese politician to say such things. It's obscene, you know. And what they want is for the world to keep talking, not just about nuclear weapons, but about the fact that these nuclear weapons had this horrific effect on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and these survivors continue to live with these effects. I mean, people died and are continuing to die from the effects to this day. Now, the danger is, of course, as we said, that the further we get away from the event, the fewer survivors there are. There's about 100,000 survivors left, but most of those people were very, very young when this event happened. You know, they have sort of flashbulb memories of what happened, but not detailed memories. And some of them are even in the womb, you know, when the bombs went off. So as those kind of direct connections to the past fade, the danger is that, you know, politicians, especially younger politicians, will start to talk about these weapons in a way that suggests you can eventually be used again.
I presume in any debate, Japan has to kind of look at its relationship with America, really, doesn't it? Because America is the country that dropped the bombs, but which has been providing protection for them, really, ever since.
Well, this is the sort of ambiguity of the Japanese position. And one of the ambiguities of the Japanese position is that after the war, of course, America occupied Japan for 6-7 years and then formed a military alliance a military treaty in 1951, which became an alliance in 1960. So all of that time, since the 1950s and 1960s, Japan has been sheltering under the American nuclear umbrella. And you have these sort of weird, you know, to my mind, very odd occasions when America, for example, under President Barack Obama, flirts with kind of nuclear disarmament. You know, like, I don't know if you remember, but Obama won the Peace Prize as well. And he did sort of express anti-nuclear sentiments. And he was the first American president to come to Hiroshima in 2016. But you have this weird occasion where the prime minister at the time, Prime Minister Abe, kind of lobbied him to not drop America's first use of nuclear weapons and to keep this deterrent, this nuclear deterrent going, because what Japan is afraid of is China, Russia, and North Korea. At least conservatives are worried about those things. So even though, you know, America dropped the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, you still have this weird ambiguous position by Japanese politicians that they want to be under this nuclear umbrella.
Same as it was really in Europe, but with the Ukrainian war and how it's gone with Donald Trump, people don't really feel like they're under that umbrella anymore. So I presume they would have similar fears in Japan.
Well, this is it. I mean, since Trump became president, you have this debate in Japan about whether Japan can really depend on its American ally. You know, they've taken this granted. They've taken this for granted now for 60, 70 years. And you had a survey recently which, you know, asked Japanese people, how do you feel about the American deterrent? And a large percentage said that they don't trust America to come to Japan's aid in the event of a conflict. And the conflict, of course, in this part of the world would probably be with China, possibly over Taiwan. And what that does is it opens up the possibility for politicians on the far right, like San Sato, to sort of say to people, well, look, America is not going to come to our aid, right? Trump is saying it's America first. He has this very transactional attitude to the rest of the world. So we have to look after ourselves. We have to provide our own military defense. And that, of course, in turn then leads to some politicians saying, well, we should have our own nuclear deterrent. And that's where we are at the moment.
Right. And when you get that debate going, does that also dig into people starting to re-examine where they were in the war and start maybe saying we weren't, you know, quite painted into the corner being the total aggressors? Maybe there was more to it than that.
Well, that debate has always been around in Japan. And it's interesting, you know, that sort of debate that we didn't do anything wrong, that America was the aggressor, that we were liberating Asia from the sort of Western imperialists. That's always been on the fringes of Japanese politics. And it's interesting how these right-wing parties, the San Seito and so on, the Hoshitos, the conservative parties, they're the most likely to kind of make this argument now. But I think that, you know, that sort of argument about what happened in the past and so on is going to continue to be a debate here. But the real issue is for most Japanese people, is not the past, it's what happens now. It's what does Japan do to defend itself? How is it going to defend itself? What is going to happen with these kind of new security realities? And how are certain politicians like San Seito going to exploit that? You know, and I think exploit is not too strong a word, because they are going to keep saying, well, Japan needs to look after itself.
Right. You don't get a sense of Donald Trump making the world a safer place anywhere he goes, either from in Europe or Japan, for that matter. It's frightening, David. David, thank you very much for joining us. It was fascinating.
You're more than welcome. Thank you.
Dr. David McNeil, there, Professor of Communications at the Sacred Heart University in Tokyo.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.